This morning's gospel lesson is from the book of Matthew, chapter 9, verses 9 through 13. As Jesus was walking along, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in the house, many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners." This is the word of the Lord.
When I was in high school, I ran track, the hurdles, highs and lows, and I played basketball. And one night after basketball practice, I was walking down the hall to my locker to get my stuff, and as I was walking down the hall, I heard a voice say to me, "I want you to go to seminary." And so I stopped and I turned to see who was in the hall with me, who was talking, and there was no one there, anywhere. And I thought, well, he can't mean me. Matthew was sitting at his tax collector's booth somewhere in the vicinity of Capernaum. He was at work that day collecting taxes. And you see, there were a multitude of taxes that the Romans imposed on the Jewish citizens. Tax collectors were the most hated people in society. First off, to become a tax collector, you had to bid for the right to collect taxes at a particular place. And so not only were you working for the enemy, for Rome, but you were also cheating your own people. Because when you came up to a tax booth, there was no sign there that said, "This is how much it will cost you to travel on this road." There was no sign that said, "This is how much it costs to enter the city or to travel through this gate." Nothing anywhere told you how much it would cost you to sell your fish at the market or to buy the goods that you needed. Nowhere was it posted what the tax rate was per wheel or axle of your cart. So the only thing that you really knew when you came up to the tax booth was that you were going to be paying way more than your fair share of taxes, because tax collectors made their living by adding on to the taxes that Rome charged, and most of them were incredibly wealthy, and all of them were despised. They were considered to be kind of the underbelly of the world. They were lumped together with liars and murderers. In fact, if you were a tax collector and you witnessed a crime, you couldn't even go to court to testify because you weren't considered to be reliable. They were unclean. They couldn't go to the temple. And if they happened to wander onto your property or wander into your house, that made your house or your property unclean. Oftentimes in Scripture, they get lumped together with sinners. And you heard, as Harlan read this morning, who did Jesus eat with? Tax collectors and sinners. And the two became synonymous. And so it was that day that as Jesus was walking along, maybe he'd come from the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee, he came to Matthew's tax collector booth. Probably had the disciples he'd already called with him. Maybe there was a whole gaggle of folks that was following behind. And he walked up to Matthew's tax collecting booth. Maybe he looked him right in the eye and he said, "Follow me." That was it. "Follow me." And Matthew got up and he followed. The thing is, he took an incredible risk. The guys who were fishermen, if this following Jesus didn't work out, they could go back to fishing. They could make a living. But Matthew couldn't go back to a tax collector's booth even if it was the next day, because by the next day, Rome would have already replaced him. But he got up and he went. Maybe he'd seen Jesus before. Maybe he'd stood on the very fringes of the crowd and listened to Jesus teach. Maybe he'd heard people telling stories of things that Jesus had said or done, miracles that he had performed. I'm not quite sure what that means. I'm just going to keep moving back and forth. They can't hit a moving target, right? Maybe, just maybe, God had been at work in Matthew's heart, and Matthew didn't even know it. Whatever it was, the thing about Jesus is that he's compelling. Whether it's the look in his eyes, whether it's his stature, his countenance, or the energy that seemed to surround him, Jesus was compelling. And Matthew got up and walked, fell right in with everybody else. But he didn't go with his head hanging and his glum look on his face. He didn't go with his tail between his legs. He went home and threw a party. He invited all of his friends. Tax collectors have friends too. Tax collectors, sinners, maybe prostitutes. Who knows who all was invited to this party? The thing is, we eat with people that we like and people who like us back. And so he throws this huge party and he invites Jesus and his newfound friends, the disciples, to come to this party. Maybe in the midst of things, he stood up and said, "Hey, everybody, I have an announcement to make. I'm leaving the business. I'm going to go and be one of Jesus' disciples. Me, a tax collector." Can you hear his friends laughing? "Really? You? A tax collector? You're going to with the rabbi? Are you crazy?" They know who you are. They will recognize you. And they hate you. "Are you really sure this is what you want to do?" And then you can hear more laughter. You see, these folks had a relationship. They knew the same challenges. They faced some of the same temptations. No doubt each and every one of them was hated in their neighborhood, in their community. But they had relationships. They could trust one another, at least as much as one tax collector could trust another. Maybe they invited some of the newer guys to teach them the tricks of the trade. And there in the midst of all of that was Jesus and his disciples. They were watching. They were listening. I bet Jesus had a twinkle in his eye. Maybe he sat there smiling at the camaraderie that he saw amongst these folks that were so hated. And the cool thing is, Jesus was right at home there. He belonged there. We don't know what the other tax collectors, the other sinners thought. We don't know what they talked about. But we do know what the religious elite of the day thought. They thought Jesus was crazy, that he was misguided, deranged. Why, of all the people you could go eat with, would you choose to eat with tax collectors and sinners, for heaven's sakes? And then Jesus set them straight. And he said to them, "These folks, they're the reason why I'm here." I'd finished college when my most favorite grandmother died. And after everything had been sold and we had taken the treasures that we wanted and the estate had been settled, there was a bit of money for each of 5 grandkids. I don't know what my brother did with his. I don't know what my 3 cousins did with theirs. But I took mine and I went to the motherland, right? I went to Norway. And then I traveled into Sweden and Finland and Denmark. And I traveled throughout Northern Europe and in England and Scotland. I was gone 4 months. It was amazing and wonderful. What I didn't know when I left was that Jesus was at work in my heart. And so as I traveled, I discovered that I seemed to find myself in significant places at least once a week. Places that I didn't necessarily set out to go, I just kind of ended up there. So there was the Rock Church in Helsinki. It's hewn into a huge rock in the middle of town, and I actually walked over it before I found the entrance. There was the York Minster in York, England. They had just reopened it after a huge fire had destroyed part of it. And when I went that night to Evensong, they were singing some of my grandmother's favorite music. And then there was the little church in my great-great-great-grandmother's hometown, where I got to go back to the sacristy, and the pastor showed me the records of my family for literally hundreds of years, births and baptisms and confirmations and weddings and funerals. And as time went on, things began to come full circle. That call that I heard that night in the hallway in my high school started to make sense. I want you to go to seminary. And the strategic places that I found myself, and the travel and the dis-ease that I had been feeling, all started to come together. And so when I got back home, I made an appointment and I went to talk to my pastor, and I said, you got to help me sort this out. And so he says, well, tell me the story. So I told him the whole story. And he invited me into his life. And for the next year, I spent time with him. I watched him teach. I helped him teach. He watched me teach. I got to go on visits with him. I watched him prepare for sermons. And at the end of that year, when I left for seminary, I had a pretty good idea what it was that I was going to be up against. You see, Jesus called those disciples. He invited them into his life so that they could learn, so that they could listen, so they could watch, so they could help, and so eventually he could send them out to do the things that he was doing. They listened to him talk about how much God loves us, about how much it's going to cost to follow, about who God is. Jesus taught them so that there would be a time when they could teach others. He invited them, come, follow me, watch what I do. And so they did. Many of us have grown up watching someone significant, whether it's a parent, a grandparent, an aunt or uncle. Maybe it's a close family friend or a neighbor. And they've invited you, me, us into their lives, haven't they? And they've taught us things, whether it's carpentry or woodworking. Maybe some of us learned how to cook. Maybe some of us learned how to play musical instruments or a specific sport. Maybe some of us learned how to fix cars. Some of us perhaps learned how to fix everything else. I completely missed that part. And we learned, didn't we? And we grew. And there was a point where maybe there were kids or grandkids or neighbor kids or nieces or nephews or maybe even church kids that we invited into our lives to share the things that we know with them. Maybe we had the privilege of sharing our love for Jesus with some of them. Why? Because there was a connection that gave us a chance to share, it gave us a time and a place and a way to interact in somebody else's life. Because the thing is, we know people, don't we? We hang out with people. We have relationships with people. We have credibility with people that allows us to teach them. My hope and prayer for us is that if we find ourselves in that place where we have an opportunity to learn from someone, or we have the opportunity to teach someone else, that we seize that opportunity with all we're worth. It starts off with listening, with watching. I'm going to pick one kind of thing as an example. If the person that invited you into their life is a carpenter, the first thing that they are going to have you do will not involve the bandsaw. Because first you have to learn what the tools are, the names, and what they're for. You have to learn about the wood, the grains, and what's soft and what's hard and what you can use this wood for and that wood for. And then once you kind of have that down, then you get to help. Maybe you get to sand. Maybe you get to hand tools to somebody. Maybe you get to hold a board. And then after you've listened and you've watched, then you get to participate. What a great day it is when they hand you your own hammer and nails or a screwdriver and screws, or maybe you're advanced for your age and you get to use the drill. But it isn't until you really understand how things work that you even get to get close to the bandsaw. That's the way it works. Jesus spent 3 years with those disciples. They didn't go out healing and casting out demons the first week. They listened to how he taught. They listened to the things that he said. They saw how he treated people, how he touched people, how he loved people. Then they got to help. And then he sent them out, two by two. Sent out full of his power, with his authority to teach and to heal and to cast out demons. You can read the whole story in Luke chapter 10. But you see, that's the goal. That we invite people into our lives. They listen, they watch, they help, they go out. So that eventually, as we became like the ones who taught us, somebody else becomes like us, so that they can then go out and teach someone else. And it all begins with an invitation. Jesus said, "Follow me." That might not be exactly the invitation we use. When we're kids, it's fun to do new things. It's fun to try new things and to play with things we've never played with before. But sometimes as adults, that "follow me," there's some fear there, a little bit of reticence, if you will. Maybe the invitation we extend is, how about we meet at Starbucks for coffee? Why don't we grab some lunch? You know what? I got a herd of errands to run today. Why don't you jump in the truck and you can come with me and we'll talk as we go. It's in the midst of that that people see Jesus. I'm reminded of two ladies I know. Hazel, whose husband was sick for quite a while. It was a slog. It was painful. The struggle of the disease was hard. But over the course of that struggle and that time, Hazel learned a few things. And when she discovered that Frida was now walking the same path that she had walked, she said, "Why don't we meet for coffee?" And so now, Hazel has invited Frida into her life. And there will be a day when this particular part of Frida's walk is done, when she finds the strength that she will be able to do the same thing for someone else. She will be Jesus for someone else. That's the way this works. You know, when you look at the things that Jesus did, when he said to people, "Come on, follow me," he wasn't looking for the elite of the day. He didn't go after the wealthiest, the best dressed, the highest educated folks. They were certainly more than welcome to join in. The people that Jesus was looking for were those that had the potential to be like him. It didn't matter to him that some of them were fishermen. It didn't matter to him that Matthew was a tax collector, that he was a part of the underbelly of society, because he knew those guys could learn, that he could teach them, that they were willing to follow him. Jesus calls us too, you and me, to be learners, to be disciples, to be willing to follow, to be willing to learn, to live life the way that he lived. He's not concerned about the outside, what everybody else looks at and judges. Jesus is concerned about the inside. He's concerned about our hearts. He wants to know, are we willing to learn, to change, to do some things differently, perhaps? I remember early on when Pastor Dick was here, he and I were having a conversation. And the thing about Pastor Dick is, I don't think anybody's ever heard him say anything negative about anybody. And he would say, oh, that one's teachable. Because he knew that if somebody was teachable, there would come a point in time when they could teach others. That's what we're called to do, what we're called to be. Our goal is to live like Jesus lived so that we can help somebody else know him. So that there will be a time when people look at us and see Jesus, and when we invite them to come, they do, because they want to learn what we know. And so we look with people who have hearts for others. We look for people who are willing to follow, people who are willing to listen and to learn. We call those people persons of peace. And for all the knucklehead things that the disciples did, they were still persons of peace for Jesus because they were willing to follow. In fact, they seemed almost to be compelled to follow, to go where Jesus went, to learn what Jesus had to teach them. The cool thing is, there's a place for each and every single one of us to grow, to learn to be more like Jesus. It doesn't happen overnight. The disciples spent 3 years with Jesus. He invested 3 years of his life with them. My pastor invested a year into my life. When we invite people into our lives, we're inviting them in so that they learn. So that they learn from our imperfect examples what it means to look like, live like, and be like Jesus. And the thing is, when Jesus walked up to that tax booth that day and he said to Matthew, follow me. When he walked by the shore of the Sea of Galilee and he tapped Peter and James and John and Andrew and said, follow me. He wasn't kidding. He was serious. When he says to us, follow me, he's not kidding. He's serious. He really does want us to live a life that looks like his. He really does want us to learn to love the way he loves. He really does want us to treat people the way he treated people. So come on, let's go get some coffee.